Today is Monday, February 26. We're going to work on the lymphatic system and spend some time on review for exam 2. Okay, so on page 59, we've got a review of that capillary exchange info that we covered in here on Wednesday of last week. So just to kind of repeat what we've talked about before, there's two battling pressures in our capillaries. The reason that we actually see an exchange of fluids here is because the capillary is very thin-walled. It's only made up of tunica, what?
Intima,
right, just tunica, intima. And that tunica, intima is only simple squamous epithelial tissue. And that's why we actually see an exchange of fluids across the wall. Arteries and veins have these same two battling pressures, but we don't see the exchange of fluids or anything else because we've got a thick wall to those two vessels. All right, so at the arterial end of the vessel, we notice that we have a high blood hydrostatic pressure. What creates blood hydrostatic pressure?
Fluids,
good. And those fluids are forceful, they push against the walls of your capillary. So we say that those hydrostatic pressures are going to be pushing against the walls of your capillary. The opposite battling pressure is an osmotic pressure. That one is created by salts or solutes and proteins in the bloodstream. You know, thinking back, we talked about albumin, we talked about antibodies, another globe-shaped proteins in your blood. Those create a sense of attraction to pull fluids toward them. So we've got a battle between a pushing hydrostatic pressure and a pulling of that osmotic pressure. All right, so at the arterial end, the highest pressure wins the battle. And so why do we experience filtration of fluids at the arterial end?
More pressure, right?
More
pushing it out.
Good, higher pressure gradient, you got more pressure pushing fluids out, less pressure in comparison pulling fluids in. So filtration pushes fluids from your capillary into your interstitial spaces. At the venule end, we lost pressure. Which pressure have we lost?
The pushing pressure.
The pushing pressure, good. So the hydrostatic pressure is less at the venule end. Osmotic pressure is still the same at 26 millimeters mercury. Because you've now had a drop in your pushing pressure, that hydrostatic pressure, you're no longer able to filter fluids out. So fluids are now reabsorbed back into the venule end of your capillary. So thanks to a decline in that hydrostatic pressure, we actually get to reabsorb. It's about 90% of those fluids back into the venule end of our capillary. Okay, so that very first question there says, how does hydrostatic pressure change from the arterial end of your capillary to the venule end of your capillary? What happens to your hydrostatic pressure?
Decreases,
good. So hydrostatic pressure will decrease from your arterial end to the venule end. Do you know the reason behind that drop in pressure?
It's losing momentum.
It's losing force, and you're losing the fluids that create that pressure. Where are those fluids going? They're leaking out, right? Okay, so it's kind of like a tire that's been punctured. It eventually loses pressure. Likewise, your capillaries lose pressure due to the fluids leaking into that interstitial space. All right, so number two there, the drop in which pressure allows interstitial fluid to travel back into your capillary? Is it BHP or BOP? BHP. Yeah, that one's the one that has to drop in order for you to be able to pull fluids back in. BHP has to be lower than 26. Why 26? Is your pulling power, right? So you've got to have your pushing power less than your pulling power. So your BHP has to drop at least below 26. What effect for number three do plasma proteins have on the fluids in the interstitial space? So these proteins are inside your capillary. And we're looking at what impact they have on these fluids outside the capillary. Do those proteins push out those fluids or pull them back in? Pull them back in, right. Okay, so number three there, those plasma proteins pull fluids back in your capillary. All right, so number four there, why do fluids return to the venule end of your capillary? And why are they not able to be pulled back in at the arterial end of your capillary?
High pressure gradient is high enough.
Yes, that BHP has dropped from high to low pressure. And thanks to a big drop-off there, now we've got an ability to pull fluids back in. Okay, so for number four, why does fluid return to the capillary at the venous or venule end, but not at the arterial end? You're working...
The venous end ain't got high enough of pressure. Out.
That's right. Yeah, that hydrostatic is not great enough to push out the fluids. Good.
Thank you.
So we haven't really talked about number five. About 90% of the fluids that you push out do get reclaimed back into your venule end. That means about 10% of your fluids are escaping and not being able to reabsorb into the venule end of your capillary. Therefore, for number five, any escaped fluids that are not picked up by your capillary enter into what's called a lymphatic system. So the lymphatic system picks up those escaped fluids. Okay, number five there, any fluids that are not picked up get pulled into this lymphatic system. It is, and we're going to cover that in just a few minutes. Okay, number six, which pressure is responsible for filtration at your arterial end?
BHP.
So I'm going to put a star beside that one. That one's responsible for filtration. Of course, we talked in here on Wednesday of last week that the higher pressure wins the battle. So at the arterial end, we have a BHP, that's a hydrostatic pressure pushing with 35 millimeters mercury out. And we've got an osmotic pressure that's pulling in. That osmotic pressure is created by salts and proteins in the bloodstream. So the higher pressure is 35, that is effective in pushing fluids out of your capillary. Let's see, number seven says, what pressure is responsible for reabsorption at your venous end?
BOP,
good. So the higher pressure once again wins the battle. So at the venule end of your capillary, you have pulling power of about 26 millimeters mercury. What is BOP created by?
Salts and plasma proteins.
Good. So the presence of those salts and plasma proteins pull fluids from the interstitial space back into your capillary. That overcomes the lower pressure existing here with your hydrostatic pressure. What creates hydrostatic pressure? Yeah, force of the fluid in your capillaries. So you're battling salt and protein with water, and you actually don't have enough force to push fluids out and out the venule end. So when we're pulling fluids back in, it's the osmotic pressure that can accomplish that return of fluids to your capillary. Okay, so how about questions so far on those first seven that we've just covered? Do those all make sense to you? Any of those I need to go back and hit one more time? Have I lost you anywhere? Okay. Number 8, what would happen to fluid transport if hydrostatic pressure exceeded osmotic pressure at this venule end of the capillary? What if hydrostatic was greater than osmotic?
It would push all the fluids out and no fluids would be reabsorbed.
Bingo, good. All the fluid would be pushed out, none would be reabsorbed. So you'd continue to push fluids out. You wouldn't be able to reabsorb. So I know last Wednesday we covered this during the last few minutes of class. I probably didn't have time to tell you this tidbit. When you're pushing fluids out, the force of that pressure is pretty strong. So you can actually push plasma proteins into your interstitial space. And that can be a problem, as you see here in number 9. If you have escaped plasma proteins in this interstitial space, okay, and it says if they cannot be picked up by your lymphatic system, and that's normally how we should pick them back up. Then it says for number 9, what pressure in the capillary is affected?
The pressure on the venule.
Well, are we looking at, if we lose plasma proteins, are we looking at losing hydrostatic pressure or osmotic?
Osmotic.
Osmotic, yeah. So for number 9, the pressure we expect to have lost is osmotic pressure, or you can call it BOP. Thinking along similar lines here, number 10 says, if you can't reabsorb the fluids back into the capillary, fluid, that's our key word there. If you can't reabsorb the fluids, now which pressure is affected?
BHP.
Good. Your hydrostatic is the one that's based on fluids. So for number 10, your BHP would be affected. So number 11 has a lot going on there. It says the liver makes plasma proteins like albumin, okay? So why would liver disorders lead to edema? Name one specific type of pressure involved in capillary exchange that would be affected by a liver disorder. And why would that particular pressure be affected? Well, plasma proteins, we're screaming at what pressure?
BOP,
good. Would you see an increase or a decrease in BOP?
A decrease.
A decrease, good. So BOP is our problem. It would decrease. And so let's talk about this issue of edema for just a moment. If you're pushing out so many fluids into this interstitial space and you're not able to adequately reabsorb them back into the venule end of your capillary, then you're having to rely on what backup system to clean up your mess? Lymphatic, good. Yeah, so lymphatic system only works so fast. So if you flood this interstitial space with a lot of extra fluid, the lymphatic system says, hey, I work at one speed, you know, and I'll pick it up when I can, but for the meantime, you're gonna be dealing with extra fluid in this interstitial space. The name for that is what?
Is this how people get ascites and peritoneal fluid buildup?
Exactly right, yeah. Swollen legs?
Yeah.
Everything from ascites to swollen legs, yeah, all of this. Yeah. So if you push it out and you can't pull it back into the venule end of your capillary, then yeah, your problem is now called edema, and that results in excess interstitial fluids. So that kind of explains number 11. If you have a problem with your osmotic pressure, you're gonna have a problem reabsorbing those fluids back in the venule end of your capillary. That means that your backup system, your lymphatic, is going to be the only one operating, and until it cleans up all this escaped fluid, you've got excess fluid in that interstitial space. Okay, does number 11 make sense? Along the very same lines, number 12 says, how does high blood pressure, high BHP, promote edema?
Because it pushes all the fluid out into the interstitial, thus causing the lymphatic system to have to do all the work.
Exactly, right. Because if you have no ability to reabsorb, let's say that your BHP is something like 30 down here, are you able to reabsorb anything? Yeah, so high blood pressure can force the fluids out. You're exactly right. You can't pull them back into the venule end. And so you're saying, hey, lymphatic system, you take 10% of those escape fluids and pick them up. Well, here, take all of them. And so that's how you end up getting those excess fluids in the interstitial space, and that causes edema. Okay.
So repeat that, the answer 12.
Okay, so let's boil that down to something that'll fit there.
Thank you.
You can filter, but you can't reabsorb. And then you've got extra fluid stuck in the interstitial space.
I remember Dr. Day, and it might help somebody, but he had his coffee and he had his graham crackers, and he was just trying to give an image, and he just put his graham cracker in his coffee, and he was like, this is the protein and this is what's sucking up in the graham cracker. I don't know. It just kind of stuck with
that's
me
good.
That image.
Yeah, because that's exactly what they do. They pull that water. That's great.
So the coffee was the BLP?
Coffee's the fluid.
The fluid. Okay.
And the graham cracker was the protein. It kind of sucked up that fluid. Eventually come back full circle to this problem in chapter 25 is all about fluid electrolyte balance. So we're kind of setting the stage right now for that process. Number 13 actually kind of takes you into that fluid electrolyte thought process. So for instance, how would drinking salt water, there's our keyword, salt, how would that impact your BOP? You've got
the water's gonna follow that salt.
That's right. So do you think your BOP would increase or decrease?
It would decrease.
The more salt you've got, the
it would increase.
Higher your BOP goes. Yeah, so drinking salt water would actually increase your BOP. We've actually covered number 14 already. We've done it by looking at some previous questions. So how could a change in osmotic pressure or hydrostatic pressure cause edema? Let's take those one by one. How could you alter the osmotic pressure and end up leaving a bunch of fluid in the interstitial space? Would you raise your osmotic pressure or would you lower your osmotic pressure? What if we still had 15 to 17 and we lowered your osmotic pressure to 10? Could you reabsorb?
No.
Yeah, and then where does all that fluid you just pushed out stay?
It stays in the interstitial fluid.
Yeah, so if you lower your BOP, you can end up with edema, which is excess interstitial fluid. Okay, so you could lower your BOP, and what could you do to your BHP?
Increase it,
yeah. So the more force you've got pushing out, the more fluid you can end up with in that interstitial space. Good, so you could lower BOP and you could raise BHP. Almost done. Number 15 there. What situations can you think of that will help increase fluid return to the venous end of your capillary? Increase the BOP. That increases your pulling power. Okay. Or?
Decrease the BHP.
Awesome. Good. So either increase your BOP or decrease your BHP. Basically, that boils down to more salt or less water. There's not a ton of questions on this topic on the test that may come as a relief to you. You do not have to know the numbers. Only ones you want to know are the net filtration pressure numbers, 10 at your arterial end, and -8 at your venule end. If the other numbers stick for you, that's great, but I'm not going to ask them. We will come back full circle to this topic when we do this chapter, this content again in chapter 25. So this is not the last time we'll see this topic. Any part of this I can go back and clarify or make better sense of for you? All right, just a little bit over on page 60 there. We've actually covered the top part of the page with edema. And I'll let you guys read the bottom part of the page. And so what I'd like to do instead is get you over into the lymphatic system. That starts on page 62. This is a really short chapter. Okay, so we already know a little bit about the lymphatic system. We know its main function is to pick up escape fluids. Those fluids were pushed out of the arterial end of your capillary, and about 90% of those fluids get reabsorbed in the venule end of your capillary. So if you did not have your lymphatic system, you would accumulate around 3 liters of fluid per day in your interstitial space. You could gain weight without even doing anything, just water weight escaped into that interstitial space. All of these fluids that are escaping from your cardiovascular system need to get back into their circulation. And so we have an opportunity to clean these fluids before we return them to the blood flow. So we have an opportunity to basically play a role of immunity here, eating and destroying any kind of bacteria, viruses, or even cancer cells that may be present in that lymphatic fluid. So lymph is going to be picked up by these lymphatic vessels, and they contain extra interstitial fluids. These are fluids that were not able to get reabsorbed back into the venule end of your capillary. We also see plasma proteins that were pushed out of your capillaries. It is really important that we pick those up into the lymphatic system. What if you don't pick up those escaped plasma proteins? What if they stay in your interstitial space?
Your BOP would go down.
Your BOP would go down, right. And the fluid in your interstitial space would hang out with those proteins like they were the best thing ever. And what would that cause?
That would cause your BHPD to be high, parallel to the venule end, and the BOP, thus pushing everything out.
It continue pushing everything out, right? Because those plasma proteins, if they're stuck in that interstitial space, will attract more fluids to hang out with them. So we've got to pick up those proteins and put them in the lymphatic system. We do have white blood cells in lymph. They're important for destroying bacteria, viruses, and cancer cells. But we have no reason to need red blood cells or platelets. Where are they confined to travel?
In the blood vessels.
In the blood vessel, right, because blood cells, of course, transport oxygen and CO2, and platelets are in that bloodstream to help clog up in a clotting damaged vessel. So no need for those to escape into our lymphatic system. So we've talked about the reason that fluids are pushed out. It is basically due to high hydrostatic pressure at your venule arterial end and the lack of an ability to return all those fluids back to the venule end. They color the lymphatic vessels on this picture green because they don't want us to be confused with red arteries or blue veins. The catch is all of these lymphatic vessels are pushing or actually sending fluids back to your heart. This is a one-way system. It is not a circulatory system. So our intention here is not to circulate lymphatic fluids around your body, but to send them in one direction only, and that is to your thoracic cavity. So all of these lymphatic vessels are closed in, heading back towards your heart. This should look familiar. Does this description of a lymphatic vessel sound more like an artery or more like a vein?
It's a vein because it's thin-walled.
Good. It sounds like a vein because it's thin-walled, right. So larger lymphatic vessels even have valves. What does that prevent from happening?
Backflow.
Backflow, good. And this is also a low pressure, basically it's a no pressure system, and there's no pump here to help circulate your lymph. So what can you do to help get the lymph moving back towards your heart?
Muscle contractions,
good. Take a deep breath, okay? And also, smooth muscles in some of our larger lymphatic vessels can help to massage and pump that fluid back to the heart. But for the most part, you are relying on your physical activity and your motion to help get that lymph flowing. I know you've noticed if you sit for a long time or stand for a long time, what happens to your legs? Swell, right? So all that excess fluid does not get back to your heart. It tends to pool. So moving about, exercise can help to move that lymph and the blood back toward the heart. Let me take you down there to the bottom of your page and talk about lymph capillaries for just a moment. Tell me what you know about cardiovascular capillaries. What do you know about cardiovascular capillaries? Thin-walled or thick-walled?
Thin-walled.
Thin-walled, good. Made only of tunica?
Intima.
Good. And that's simple squamous tissue. That's all they have. Capillaries in the lymphatic system are very similar. They, too, are thin-walled. They, too, are made up of only a single layer of cells. But they're a little different in that they have these pores that are basically propped open. So if you were to prop open these doorways, you would do so using some doorstops. The doorstops here are collagen fibers. So if you've ever walked down a boardwalk like at Myrtle Beach, if those stores want you to come in, they prop their doors open, right? You are more likely to see something that catches your eye, and you're more likely to go into the store or the restaurant if the doors are propped open. That's the same thing that happens with lymphatic capillaries. They prop their doors open, they use those collagen fibers to get the doors to stand wide open, and any extra fluids surrounding that lymphatic capillary are basically invited to come on inside to that lymphatic capillary. What do you think happens to those doors when we get the capillary full of fluid?
They shut.
Shut them, exactly. Pull up the doorstop and let those doors slam shut. And now the fluid is trapped inside your lymphatic capillary. Now, if you were to let those doors continue to sit open once your capillary fills, what would happen to all that fluid you just collected?
It would eventually cause the vessel to burst.
It bust the vessel or it'd leak right back out. Yep. So you'll notice this is a closed-in lymphatic capillary. That means that we are not circulating this lymphatic fluid. We are taking it on a one-way ride only
to the heart.
Good. And so these little doorways that we were talking about, these are called mini valves. And these mini valves are propped open using those collagen fibers. You can see how these capillaries are woven throughout your capillary network for the cardiovascular system. Why not hang out where the fluids are getting escaped from the cardiovascular in the first place? That is a prime location to pick up those escaped fluids. The catch is, we're not circulating this fluid, it's only going back to the heart to rejoin circulation. Let's see, I put you a couple of questions down there near the bottom of your page. If you had a blockage in a lymphatic vessel, what do you think would happen to that lymph? It could not go back to the heart. Good. That lymph could not go back to the heart. So if you had a lymph blockage, that lymph could not go back to the heart. And this takes you full circle. What happens to cardiac output and blood pressure if you have less lymph being returned to your blood? It'd go down. Good. So both of those would decrease. Okay, cardiac output and blood pressure would both decrease. I know this picture is very light in color. You may be able to see that there is a shading on the right-hand side. On this picture, the right side of the head the right side of the chest cavity and the right arm are all actually shaded a light green color. It's not showing up very well in this picture. The reason for the light green shading is because that side of the body drains differently from the rest of your body. This is not a symmetrical drainage pattern for lymph. In fact, your left side of your head, your left arm, your left thoracic cavity, and both legs actually drain onto the left side of your thoracic cavity. So these two drainage patterns are different. Ultimately, we end up putting the lymph back here into these ducts in the chest cavity. And into what blood vessel do they dump their lymph? So, Clavian, and is it artery or vein?
Yes, artery. Or no, vein.
It's a vein, yeah. So veins are usually used to picking up a lot of fluids. This is a great place to dump your lymph. And this lymph travels from your subclavian veins back to your brachiocephalic veins, and then ultimately back to your superior vena cava. Where does the superior vena cava take that blood and lymph?
It takes it to the right atrium.
Right atrium, good. So, you know, the catch is here, all of the lymph from your entire body ends up in your chest. That means lymph in your toes ends up in your chest, and ultimately it drains into your subclavian veins and then back to your heart. So we've got to return this fluid, otherwise that'd be about 3 liters of fluid per day that would end up hanging out in our interstitial space, causing edema. Okay, so when they put in, you know, a surgical shunt or a port there, it's often into that same location, into those subclavian veins. Those veins are big, they're used to picking up fluids like this lymph that's coming from the entire body. So that flow pattern is found on the top of page 63. Now, if you're putting these fluids back in the heart from your toes and from every part of your body, we should clean that fluid before it rejoins blood flow. What is the danger of putting bacteria into your lymph that gets back to your heart? Where can it now go?
Problems there.
Yeah, bloodstream, right? The heart can pump it out everywhere. Anywhere that's accessible by blood now has that bacteria, so you can circulate it everywhere. So what we need to do then is clean that blood with, or sorry, that lymph with lymph nodes before it gets back into the bloodstream. Okay, so middle of your page there, lymph nodes, their function is to clean lymph before it gets back to the bloodstream.
Tumor cells, you're talking about cancer cells.
Cancer cells, right. Sure, the job of a lymph node is to clean lymph before it rejoins blood flow. All right, so the job of a lymph node is to clean lymph before it rejoins blood flow. The way we do that is by having macrophages, which are those big eating white blood cells like neutrophils, monocytes, situated in those vicinity. We also have lymphocytes there. Do you recall what lymphocytes make?
White blood cells.
Yeah, they're white blood cells, and they build
antibodies.
Antibodies, good. So they'll build immunity for us against any invaders that pass through one of those lymph nodes. The main locations of lymph nodes are ones that you can actually feel your lymph nodes. You have some scattered in your neck area. They're called the cervical lymph nodes. Where can you feel them around your head?
Like the bottom of your neck.
Good, bottom of your neck. Even the back of your neck, you can feel them sometimes. If you have a really awful sinus condition and your lymph nodes are constantly cleaning, then you may have sore lymph nodes in your neck. They may be swollen. You may also have them under your chin as well. We also have a collection of lymph nodes in our axillary and inguinal regions. Where are the axillary lymph nodes? Armpits, good. And inguinal ones are around the leg where the leg joins to the body. Those are really good places to clean this lymph before it rejoins the blood flow. So if you feel a lymph node, it is about an inch long. It's a kidney bean-shaped organ. And the goal here is to help clean this lymph. So they're not meant to be swollen unless they're cleaning. If you happen to have swollen lymph nodes and they're not, you know, necessarily cleaning anything at that moment, that could be a sign of lymphoma or lymph node cancer. So we should be aware of our lymph nodes and know of any changes that come about. Occasionally people have some that swell, you know, maybe they are cleaning something, but the swelling is what we should be aware of, that there's no cleaning going on at that point.
Is that what causes a child to have the lymph nodes not taken out when they're good?
Yeah, and if there's cancer in a nearby organ, they'll take the lymph nodes just in case, or they may look at the lymph nodes and see if they're impacted, and if they are filled with cancer cells, then yeah, they'll take them too. That's not the only place you've got lymph nodes. You've got them along your aorta. You've got them scattered along your major vessels. You'll notice here that the major ones are the ones we talked about, but there are other lymph nodes besides just those. This is how a typical lymph node is built. It has vessels coming in called afferent vessels. It has vessels exiting called efferent or efferent vessels. I emphasize the A coming in and the E exiting because efferent and exit is how I keep it straight, the E for E there. And I want you to look at how many vessels we're dealing with. They've drawn this picture to have four afferent vessels coming in and only two efferent vessels leaving. What does that mean happens to the lymph that gets into this lymph node?
It's going to be easy to get in, but it's going to be hard to get out.
Bingo. Easy to get in, hard to get out. So it's like one of those toll booths. You know, you go through a bunch of toll lanes. They widen the toll lanes up to 20 lanes wide. They want your money. You give them your money to go through the toll booth. And then what do? There's two.
They stick you in the littlest one they can.
That's right. You've got all these cars and trucks coming into two lanes leaving. So they've got your money. Now they don't care about you anymore. So lymph nodes work the same way. There's plenty of lanes to get in, but not to get out. That gives us an opportunity to clean that lymph. Likewise, there are trabeculae. These are like fibrous strands that separate these rooms into chambers inside your lymph node. What do you think the benefit is of having little rooms or chambers inside a lymph node? If you have something to destroy, do it in a little room. Don't take out the whole thing. Exactly. Good. All right. So lymph nodes are our cleaning mechanism. They clean our lymph before that lymph gets back to the heart. And then we have a few other organs that play an important role. They're over on page 64. These lymphoid organs play a role in our lymphatic system, and they often have macrophages to eat bacteria and viruses, and they'll also have lymphocytes that help provide antibodies against those foreign invaders. So these organs may play a role in other systems. That's why they're called lymphoid. They are lymph-like organs, and they may have other duties that we will not discuss here. So the spleen is our first one. The spleen is found on what side of your abdominopelvic cavity? Left side. Good. It is a membrane-wrapped organ, and I make that point because if you ever have a swollen spleen that happens to rupture, they cannot put that membrane back together, so they simply remove the spleen. People who are in car accidents sometimes have a spleen that gets ruptured, and again, they'll take that spleen out if that membrane capsule is, you know, torn or ruptured. So if you happen to have a spleen that is removed, what organ picks up the duties?
Liver.
Liver picks up the duties. I believe I underlined the important functions there for you. The spleen cleans blood. So let me contrast this. We just talked about the lymph nodes. The lymph nodes don't clean blood. They clean lymph. The spleen, however, cleans blood. So we've got two cleansing organs we've just talked about. Lymph nodes clean lymph. The spleen cleans our blood. And because the spleen cleans our blood and removes worn out blood cells, it is a storage site for parts. In the case of a hemorrhage where you're losing a lot of blood, the spleen may produce, you know, a lot of these cells or damaged cells in a circulation and allow us to maintain blood circulation, oxygen delivery. Likewise, platelets may be stored here as well, so we have a kind of a backup plan for clotting if we need it. The spleen can donate those platelets to circulation if necessary.
So it's kind of like a junkyard.
It's kind of like a junkyard, yeah. If you need a part, go get it from there. That's a good way to look at it. We've talked about the thymus before. It was back in our endocrine system. Do you recall the name of the hormone it produces? Thymosin. Good. And at what point of your life is your thymus gland most active?
Puberty.
Puberty, up through childhood and puberty. After your teenage years, what happens to your thymus gland?
Diminishes,
right. So, you know, after you're, say, 20 years old, we say, okay, where do we program these T lymphocyte cells that were being programmed by your thymus gland? Well, they're now programmed by another T location, and that's your tonsils. So, you know, beyond the years of your thymus gland, your tonsils can still program lymphocytes. I imagine people back in the 50s and 60s that had their tonsils removed probably had no idea that they were taking away their secondary site for programming those lymphocytes. So, kind of an interesting thing. We know more nowadays about what we should leave in our bodies versus what we should take out. This picture is actually incorrect for the tonsils. They are scattered around the mouth area, but there's not six of them. There's actually only five of them. This comes from a book publisher, and I show it because it's kind of interesting that, you know, they've drawn it wrong here, but there's only one set of tonsils that sit above your soft palate in the nasopharynx region. That set is your adenoids. You've got a pair that sits at the back of your throat that you can see by saying, ah, those are your palatine tonsils. How about the ones at the base of your tongue? Lingual, good. So you've got basically three tonsil sets. One of them is just one major mass at the back of your throat. So the only ones out of all these tonsils that you can really see are those palatines on either side. Someone can, of course, look through your nose and see your adenoids, or they can look way back in your throat and see those linguals. So tonsils are a place to remove pathogens that come into your mouth and your nose area, and they can program lymphocytes after your late teenage years are over. All right, so tonsils and these things called Peyer's patches are part of a MALT system. MALT stands for mucosa-associated lymphatic tissue, and that means that these tissues are in the mucosa lining of your body. So tonsils are in the mucous membrane of your throat. These Peyer patches are in the mucous membrane of your small and large intestine. What do you think we need these lymphoid tissues in your intestines for?
To capture any viruses and all that tries to go into your intestines.
Good. Capture viruses, capture bacteria. Because what is normally being absorbed from your intestines?
Nutrients.
Yep, so if those viruses and bacteria are hiding among the nutrients, we want to capture those. Don't let them get into the bloodstream before they can go systemic or body-wide. Yeah, hitchhikers, we want to stop the hitchhikers. You got good analogies today. And you know what, that is actually it. I told you this was a short chapter, promised you it was short and sweet. That is it for it. And there's some practice on pages 65 and 66, but that's it for this chapter. All right, so I'd like to open the floor to you and go back and review anything you'd like to hear again for the test on Wednesday. While you're looking for your questions, I'll show you a couple of pictures that are disorders here. This is lymphedema. This comes from plasma proteins that are stuck in the interstitial space. So if those lymphatic system vessels don't pick up the escape proteins with the fluid stays stuck in between your cells and tissues. You can take diuretics, you can take all sorts of stuff, and it doesn't do a whole lot to get the fluid out of that interstitial space. You know, basically once the plasma proteins gets trapped there in the interstitial area, there's not much that we can do. So it's an unfortunate situation to have lymphedema. This case here comes from a mastectomy. They've taken out the lymphatic nodes up under the armpit, and that reduces the pathway for the lymph getting back to the heart. So you would have to wear a compression sleeve to return this fluid back to the heart in that swollen arm. Some parts of the world have little worms called Wuchereria that live in a life cycle that involves people and, guess what, mosquitoes. No surprise there. Everything bad lives in mosquitoes, right? So this little worm can get into our bodies. This is the area of the world where that's common. Not in our area, but more around the tropics and the equator belt of the world. And the life cycle, yeah, here it goes, involves a mosquito. And once in our bloodstream, the larvae of that worm will travel to our lymph nodes and block the lymph vessels from having fluids travel back toward the heart. So this one's called elephantiasis. You'll notice the legs are swollen here. That is not fat, that is fluid. Nowadays, if that's something that somebody contracts, they can give antibiotics to kill the little worms and hopefully open up those vessels and let the fluid flow back to the heart. You know, if there's scar tissue in those lymphatic vessels, then we may have no ability to get that fluid back. I mean, that person may be stuck in that situation. This is another case of elephantiasis of the leg here. Yet another case, one leg's affected, the other leg looks okay. And then it can also affect the scrotum area. It can block the lymphatic vessels leading fluids away from the scrotum. And could you imagine, 1 gallon of water weighs 5 pounds. How many gallons of fluid are in the scrotum here causing that skin to stretch? And yeah, they could give them antibiotics to kill the worms, but then they have this excess skin that they would have to do something with if they were lucky enough to get the fluid to pull back to the heart. So imagine transport with that. All right, so that takes us back full circle. You got your questions ready?
No, but I don't feel ready.
What would you like to go back and review? Blood pressure, diastole, systole, anything of that sort, any old stuff?
As far as the EKGs go, how in-depth, I know I've asked you this already, but how in-depth do we need to know these? We need to just know which ones are lethal and fatal? Do we need to know the treatments for them?
Just be able to identify them.
Picture
identification.
Okay.
And then be sure that you can count the R wave to R wave for the cardiac cycle.
Which is the 0.2 seconds, right?
0.2 seconds for the big box, yes.
Okay. That's it?
That's about it, yeah. And then for the regular normal sinus rhythm, just be able to tell what each wave does and what part of the firing of that conduction system produces the waves. You need to hear any of that again?
What was that last thing you said? And then what?
Like, if the SA node fires, what wave?
What happens next? Or
yeah.
What is the effect?
Yeah, what wave do you see? Or when the QRS wave shows up, what is hidden back there? That kind of thing.
Okay.
Let's see. How about anything from heart conduction system? Anything from heart, Raven? When you do the blood flow, don't worry about writing oxygenated versus deoxygenated. Somewhere else in the test, I may say, of these blood vessels, which one carries oxygenated blood? And that may be one or two questions at most.
Any other ideas on essays other than the two you told us?
Look at the EKG, be able to count those R wave peaks. If you understand the timing mechanism, the SA node, the 0.8 seconds is normal, what starts off the EKG is the P wave. If you're comfortable with that background, then the essay that I've got on there with an EKG, you should be able to address that one. Page 51. Yeah, and now you've got a third one, you've got an EKG to look at, and that gives you three.
Okay.
And then I can't remember, there's a 5-pointer and a 3-pointer. Look at things like blood pressure regulation. You know, we talked about sympathetic versus parasympathetic for heart rate and blood pressure. If that's not an essay, it will certainly be buried among those multiple choice questions.
Blood pressure regulation page, like talking about like page 54?
That sounds about right. Yeah, 54, 55.
Okay.
So if we have a problem like low blood oxygen, you would want to say, okay, the response is increased sympathetic, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure. How about other questions? I know you guys are still kind of pulling your content together. If you have questions and you're around tomorrow and you're free to 11 o'clock, you're welcome to drop in. I've got a class in 54 and one on main campus at 11. It is completely a review period. They're a tad bit ahead of you guys, so it is 100% a review period. If you want to drop in, ask your question, and leave, you're welcome to come by. If that time doesn't work for you, I'm in my office before 11 on main campus. That office number is 5416. I'm in there usually around 8:30, 8:45 until that class starts at 11 o'clock. So, you know, if you want to come by and chat then, you're welcome to. Do you have other questions I can help you with? Anything I can go back and review for you? I'm also in here on Wednesday, early before class. If you need anything, feel free to come in here. Sarah.
Okay, it's page 57.
It is at the bottom of the announcements, and I will double check to make sure it's there, but it should say answers to either page 57 or answers to the chart. But yeah, that's the only place it's located is the bottom of that news announcement. Sure. Anything else I can help you with? Any topics you want to go back and cover?
Will there be any labeling on
this? Just two pictures. I think there's an EKG on there. And then, you know, we talked about diastole and systole, what's contracting, what's relaxing. I think there's the only two pictures on there.
And what about review questions?
Basically,
possibly the ones that were missed previously.
Yeah. So I think there's four in this test. All right, I will see you guys on Wednesday. Good luck. Let me know if I can help you.